I am Pierre Lumumba here at Nice Solar Gardens in Kiambu County in the Republic of Kenya, and we continue with our conversation about the process of decolonization, specifically focusing on the 70s, 80s, some may say even 90s, because there are events that happened in the 1990s also that are related to process of decolonization. We must remember that in 1957, on the occasion of Ghana's independence, Kwame Nkrumah said that the independence of Ghana means nothing as long as other African countries are not independent. It is that spirit and that message that they went with in 1963 in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And in Addis Ababa, there were 32 heads of states and government that were gathered there. Those were the countries that were independent. But there was the realization that there were places in Africa that had not regained their independence. Portuguese colonies of Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau were not independent at that time. Botswana was not independent at that time. And a number of other countries, South Africa was not independent. Zimbabwe, which was then known as Rhodesia, was not independent. Southwest African Republic, now known as Namibia, was not independent. And in order to ensure that the process of decolonization was continued to ensure total liberation of the entire continent of Africa, it was agreed that a committee for the liberation be put together. And that committee for the liberation was then based in Dar es Salaam in the Republic then of Tanganyika, later to become Tanzania. And the process started in earnest. One of the most painful things, particularly when you look at the struggle in the 1970s, is that they ended up being very bloody. They were bloody because the holdout colonizer, the Portuguese, were themselves at home led by a dictatorship. And that dictatorship were of the view that they were not going to let go their colonies, because which these were the sources of their very survival. Many of us know that the country Portugal, notwithstanding that she had been a pioneer in exploration and other things, had a very small economy and depended on the economies of the bigger colonies. And for that reason, they resisted. And it is in this regard that we must therefore appreciate that most, if not all, of the Portuguese colonies in Africa had to engage in armed struggle, guerrilla struggle. And there were assassinations. Let us look at them one by one. Let us look at the country known as Mozambique, which had to have a trained guerrilla movement in Frelimo, and whose early leader, Eduardo Mondlane, was assassinated by the Portuguese while in Dar es Salaam. So you had a long-drawn guerrilla warfare because the Portuguese were resisting. In Angola, it was the same. You had a long-drawn battle led by the MPLA under the leadership of Agostinho Neto. And once again, it took a long time and many deaths, and that continued until there was liberation in the 1980s. It is also true of Guinea-Bissau and Amilcar Cabral and Cabo Verde, once again, a long drawn battle. So what one sees in the 1970s through to the 1980s, that is not to take away the fact that the struggles had started in the 1960s, is that independence is won through armed struggle. And there is the assistance of independent African countries. Tanzania became one of the countries that provided home to many of these freedom fighting movements in Frelimo, or MPLA, and these were housed there and financed by friends of goodwill, including countries such as Ghana, which were in the forefront of this support. There is also, in addition to the 1970s, the case of the Portuguese, the very long-drawn battle in apartheid South Africa. In apartheid South Africa, what had happened is that in 1948, the National Party, led by Hendrik Verwoerd, had created a system that was based on color discrimination. And when they did that, they were of the view that they were going nowhere and that the country would be run on the basis of that system. And 1912, and this is why it is important to give it a historical context, that as early as 1912, the African National Congress had been formed to fight against this apartheid movement. And it took so many years with many people dying, people such as Pixley Kaisa Kaseme. Pixley Kaisa Kaseme writes very early on and talks about the regeneration of Africa. And he writes and talks about this in the 1900s. And we see the death of very many people in the 1980s. We see the Sharpeville massacre in South Africa, the Soweto massacre in 1976. And ultimately, South Africa and the governance that is perpetrated by the white supremacists is actually declared as a crime against humanity. So that you can see that independence in South Africa is taking a totally different trajectory until 1994 during the presidency of President de Klerk, when the detainees in the Robben Island led by Nelson Mandela and others such as Govan Mbeki and Walter Sisulu are then released and South Africa regains our independence, has a multi-party election in 1994. In that regard, we also see that in Namibia, independence is also regained during that very period. And we see the leadership of SWAPO led by Sam Nujoma and Andimba, Herman Toivo ya Toivo. And this is in the 90s. This is happening because you now have a number of African leaders who are saying, and African countries who are supporting this particular initiative, because the idea is to have the total liberation of the continent of Africa through ways that are purely African. Of course, Friends of Goodwill who are there supporting, and quite a number of some of these fighters who are trained in China, trained in North Korea, trained in the Soviet Union, and trained for the purpose of carrying out these wars. The other interesting liberation struggle during that period is that was of a country then known as Southern Rhodesia. Southern Rhodesia is unique in the sense that it was a British colony, but the British who are in Southern Rhodesia, led by Ian Smith, declared their own independence from the United Kingdom. And they said that they were going to run this country. And once again, they were running it on the basis of discrimination. And a guerrilla movement and freedom fighting movement was then formed. And when the freedom movement was formed, then they were housed in Dar es Salaam. Many of them were housed in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania or in Morogoro. Some of them were housed in Zambia. And this was through the contribution and the support of African countries through the African Liberation Movement. And ultimately, of course, Southern Rhodesia was to regain her independence as Zimbabwe. One therefore sees that in the 1980s and 1970s, 1980s through the 90s, the agitation for independence is through armed struggle. And this armed struggle is one that is supported by the people who are in the forefront of the leadership in Africa on the basis of the resolution that had been made in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. Uniquely, when we talk about independence, it's also important to talk about that of Eritrea and South Sudan. These are important because they come about at a time when one assumes that there is no longer colonization in the classical sense in the continent of Africa. But we remember that Eritrea had been subsumed in the Ethiopian Federation, and they were therefore part of Ethiopia until the struggle against the Deg regime, or led by Mengistu Haile Mariam. And it is during that struggle which is headed by Meles Zenawi in Ethiopia, and on the other side by Isaias Afwerki, that after the defeat and the replacement of the Derg regime, you then have Eritrea regaining her independence and becomes a country which is recognized. And it must be remembered that Eritrea had been a colony of Italy before it became part of Ethiopia. The other very interesting country is South Sudan. And to understand the independence of South Sudan, we must remember that South Sudan regained her independence from the Anglo-Egyptian conglomeration in 1956. When they did so, the southern part of Sudan, which was described by European anthropologists as Christian and animist, was actually a closed district. And when independence came, they were very comfortable being part of Sudan. But then discrimination arose. That discrimination was on the basis of religion, Islam, and also Arabism. There were people like Hassan al-Turabi in Sudan, who thought that in order to control the entire Sudan, they were not only going to Islamize South Sudan, but they were also going to Arabize South Sudan. People had no problem with Islamization, with Islam, but they were not happy with the whole idea of Arabization. And this is what then led to the creation of the SPLA, Southern Sudan People's Liberation Army, led by John Garang de Mabior, and the struggles called Anyanya 1 and Anyanya 2. And ultimately, what did happen is that the country split. And I always remember these words, and I had the honor and privilege of working with John Garang de Mabior as a student. And I always remember these words which he spoke in Khartoum. He said, "We want Sudan to remain united, but those who are thinking of Arabizing us must remember that unity must be made attractive. If it is not attractive, then we'll part our ways." So in the year 2011, we saw the creation of the youngest nation on earth, Southern Sudan. And in their view, that is when they were decolonized. So what one sees in the 1970s, 1980s, up to the 1990s, and culminating, as I've already indicated, with the creation of Southern Sudan, is a process that is internally energized. It is internally energized through armed warfare, supported through African resources, with friends of goodwill involved in the process. And it can now be said without fear of contradiction that the 1970s, 80s, 90s, and ultimately 2001 is the end point of the entire process of decolonization and the death of classical colonization as we knew it. And that in itself is a statement that makes Africans proud. As one author once said, "Even if in our independence we are going to have problems, those will be our problems and we'll know how to solve it. But death to colonization, death to discrimination, death to dehumanization." Thank you very much. Here from Nice Solar Gardens in Kiambu County, Limuru, in the Republic of Kenya, we continue with our discussions on the continent of Africa.